Hi, everybody, and welcome to Neuroscientist Talk Shop, UTSA's neuroscience research podcast. Today is March 7th, 2024, and we're talking to Len Dobruns. I got it right?
Dobruns,
who is professor and chair at the Department of Anatomy and Neurobiology and the director of Neuroscience Institute at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center in Memphis, Tennessee. Len's research is on synaptic transmission, co-transmitters like neuropeptide Y that modify synaptic transmission, neural circuits that are important in anxiety and that use neuropeptide Y in some way, and also post-traumatic stress disorder. And this spans a huge range of scale from synaptic dynamics to anxiety, and you might think we won't get that all covered today, but we will. I mean, at least a little bit.
We'll try.
And hi, Len, so welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Super great. We're lucky to have you. Also with us is Marina Silvera.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be here.
Well, I usually describe as an auditory system physiologist, and that's true, but she also has a strong intersecting interest in neuropeptide Y.
Absolutely, my favorite one.
Its role in the auditory system.
Yeah.
So, hi, Marina.
Hi, everyone.
And I'm your host, Charlie Wilson. So, Len, for as long as I can remember, we've known about a large number of peptides that are packaged in vesicles and released by the same neurons that release small molecule neurotransmitters like GABA or glycine or glutamate. And they're packaged in a different kind of vesicle, larger vesicles, and they are not released at presynaptic active zones, as far as we can tell. But they are released by action potentials, but sometimes by special patterns of action potentials. Sometimes vaguely defined, but sometimes
yes.
Bursts or something like that, some kind of patterning. And mostly, you know, everybody's known about this for as long as any of us can remember, I think, that are still alive. But we've also noticed that it doesn't get talked about very much. So I might say, I'm working on the somatostatin neuron in the striatum. And you might say, oh, are you interested in somatostatin? And I'd say, oh, no. It's just a marker for a particular GABA cell in the striatum use. And so that kind of approach to co-transmitters has really given them the short end of the stick functionally, and we know less about them than we should. So, you know, all that's about to change, like everything does. And so you've been working on the function of one of these peptides, neuropeptide Y, which is one of the most prevalent ones.
The most prevalent neuropeptide in the brain. There was a recent study that showed that.
Great. So we're working on the right one. The big one. Always work on the big stuff, which is located, it's located in GABAergic cell types all over the forebrain. And you're dissecting their cellular function and controlling synaptic transmission at nearby glutamatergic synapses, which is very sort of standard neurophysiology thing to do. But you also have evidence that the co-transmitter could be pivotal in our experience of anxiety and anxiety disorders. So could you just give us a little rundown on what is neuropeptide Y and where is it and what is the evidence that's critical for anxiety? And then we'll try to work our way down to synaptic.
Sure. So neuropeptide Y is a 36 amino acid neuropeptide. It's been, as you mentioned, it's made in a subset of GABAergic cells. It's packaged into dense core vesicles. And I'm like you that I have initially wasn't studying MPY to study MPY. It was a marker for a subtype of GABAergic cells. And then at some point along the way, I became really interested in what MPY does. There are people who've been studying MPY and what it does for many, many years. Their whole careers have been focused on MPY and what it does. And it does a lot of really interesting things. So I've been particularly interested in MPY's role in anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder, but it has also been shown to regulate feeding behavior, learning and memory, pain, temperature, itch, have an antidepressant role, and even to regulate mosquitoes biting people. But coming back, and there's a group of really outstanding researchers that study MPY There's an international NPY meeting that happens every few years that brings these this group of researchers together. But coming back to your question about the role of what is the evidence for NPY playing a role in anxiety? So there is a lot of evidence, primarily preclinical, but some indication from clinical as well, that NPY has anti-anxiety properties. And it's established, well, pretty well established that it is a robust anti-anxiety molecule that your brain makes. And some of this evidence is from studies where overexpressing NPY reduces anxiety in rodents, injecting NPY into the hippocampus or amygdala reduces anxiety, knocking NPY out, so genetically deleting NPY increases anxiety, or likewise, the effects are through NPY receptors, so blocking the receptors also increases anxiety. So there's a lot of evidence that it can modulate anxiety, and then also evidence that loss of NPY increases anxiety. There's a lot of evidence that NPY has anti-anxiety effects, and then loss of NPY increases anxiety or contributes to increased anxiety.
Is there any connection in humans? I mean, sometimes we don't.
Yes.
We don't completely trust the rodent anxiety literature.
Yes. So there's a single nucleotide polymorphism in humans that reduces the expression of NPY and correlates with increased anxiety in humans. And then there's data from human studies with post-traumatic stress disorder that show reduced NPY expression in cerebral spinal fluid of patients with PTSD compared to others that have experienced trauma but not developed PTSD. And so it's thought that it is a stress resilience factor, and that may play a role in protecting humans from developing PTSD. Yeah.
I remember from my study that showed that the military people that go to the military, they usually, people who have a higher level of NPY, they're less likely to develop PTSD. So showing also a role of NPY in resilience as well, mm-hmm. and protecting against development of PTSD in humans, which I think is fascinating.
Think so as well. And there's probably some additional studies that I'm not remembering.
So the next step, I think, after having established that sort of whole brain approach, is to try to drill down and to figure out where, because NPY is so many places.
Yes.
It's probably not everywhere that is the anxiety place.
Yes.
I don't know, but probably not.
Probably, yeah. So there's data that suggests that hippocampus and amygdala are two of the key sites that are important for NPY's effects in anxiety. And that comes from several studies. So there is a study, Cohen et al., 2012, that they did a rodent model of post-traumatic stress disorder, the predator odor model, and they showed that the predator odor exposure caused increased anxiety-like behavior in the rodents. And then they looked at NPY levels in the hippocampus and amygdala. And it was really interesting. They did a big cohort of rats, and they found that some had a big increase in anxiety-like behavior, some had a moderate anxiety phenotype, and some were relatively unaffected, and that the reductions in NPY correlated with that in both hippocampus and amygdala. So the ones that had a big increase in anxiety had the lowest brain levels or lowest hippocampal and amygdala levels of NPY, and then moderate had a moderate reduction, and the ones that were not affected had little or no, or had smaller reductions. So it seemed to be this dose-dependent effect. And And then injecting NPY back into hippocampus or amygdala reduced the anxiety phenotype in the animals that were anxious. So that kind of zeroed in on hippocampus and amygdala as two of the brain regions that are important. And there's other studies as well that look at that support the idea that hippocampus and amygdala are two of the key brain regions for regulating anxiety and for NPY's effects in regulating anxiety.
That's an interesting treatment. So the animals get exposed to predator odor. This is
yes
something from a fox. Is that what you said?
So the study that I just mentioned put the rats in a cat litter box, well used by the cat. Our studies instead used TMT, which is a chemical from fox feces. But there are other predator odor models as well, and the rats and mice have an innate fear of the odor of their predators. It's somehow hardwired into their brain, so it's not a learned fear, it's just innate. And so being exposed to the odor of their predator in an environment where they can't escape is apparently traumatic for them and can lead to long-lasting anxiety. In our studies, we looked a week after this. We did two exposures to the fox odor and then looked a week that were a week apart and looked a week after that. But there have been studies that have shown effects lasting a month or longer.
So these are brief exposures?
15-minute exposures. So, relatively brief exposures producing long-lasting effects.
And then the NPY effects, were these predictive or these were post hoc? So do I measure NPY and then predict which rat is going to have a long-lasting effect, or do I look afterwards and see which
you
one
have
the most?
You have to look afterwards because...
Because they all start with the same amount of NPY.
Well, that is hard to answer because we can't yet measure NPY.
It's destructive.
Yes.
You have to take the brain out or something.
Yes, it's measured postmortem.
You have to do that after that.
Yes. It would be great if there was a way to measure NPY in the brain of living creatures, and in particular, that would be a wonderful tool to have to be able to measure it in humans, but we don't have that capability right now.
Yeah, that would be very valuable for sure, because then you could know, for example, whether anxiety is really being driven by baseline levels of NPY in different people.
Yes.
Right? Or different animal models. So that would be very fascinating to do.
Yeah, and one hypothesis is that that people start with different levels of NPY, for example, through genetic factors like the single nucleotide polymorphism that I mentioned, or some other factors. And then when they experience a trauma, that trauma causes a reduction in NPY. And it could be that there's individual variation in how much trauma causes NPY to be reduced, or it could be that people and animals start off at different initial levels. But if they drop, depending on where they start and how much it drops, and it drops below some threshold, then that triggers PTSD, but if it doesn't, then they might be resilient. So that's a hypothesis that's hard to test in people, again, because we can't measure NPY levels or how much they drop, where they start with or how much they drop in humans. But some of the kind of studies that could potentially be done in animal studies. And
why would they drop?
Yeah, so the research, our research and other, and that Cohen paper I told you says they do drop. Why they drop, we don't know. So we think that that it's an effect of the stress hormones, the cortisol or corticosterone that's released is causing some sort of change in the NPY cells, triggering them to presumably make less NPY, but we don't know the mechanisms that are underlying that. And that's something that it would be really interesting to try and figure out.
Do you think like a different hypothesis could be that the inputs to these NPY neurons are decreased, so they don't get as much high frequency stimulation to be released? That could be another side of the story as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a really interesting idea. And so it could be that it's not a direct effect on the NPY cells, but a change in the circuit. And if their inputs are impaired, or the cells are getting activated less, that's somehow a signal to make less NPY,
right.
And could contribute to them releasing less NPY, okay. And then therefore to anxiety.
Yeah, it's a really
interesting hypothesis.
So NPY can only reduce anxiety when it's been released. So something must cause it to get released in a situation where anxiety might be happening. Or are we thinking about it sort of a tonic change in the release? Or are we thinking about NPY working in a moment-to-moment basis to respond to anxiety-provoking situations?
So those are great questions. And the answer is we don't yet know. That's one of the things that my lab is beginning to look at, is what type of behavioral situations cause NPY cells to be activated and NPY to be released in living animals. We're doing this in mice, but for NPY to play a role in regulating anxiety, I would think it would need to be that it's triggered to be released by situations that are anxiety producing or stressful for both people and animals, but that has not been directly tested to my knowledge.
So that seems to me to give some sort of experimental leverage, because if you know then what NPY, what cellular processes NPY is acting on, you can get a handle on what cellular processes are responsible for anxiety. No?
That is the hope, is yes. So one question that my lab has really been interested in are, what are the mechanisms? What are the cellular and synaptic and circuit mechanisms, brain circuit mechanisms, that NPY is acting on to produce its anti-anxiety effects? And so really figuring out what, not only what brain regions, but what particular parts of those brain regions and what particular cell types and synaptic mechanisms can really potentially pinpoint where NPY is acting, but then also if we help us to understand those processes better, and then potentially identify some new areas for therapeutic targets to try and reduce anxiety and or prevent or treat post-traumatic stress disorder.
So is it a clue that it's contained in inhibitory neurons? So that means that the thing that's releasing it is something happening to inhibitory neurons.
Yes, it's something happening to inhibitory neurons. Yes, because GABAergic cells are inhibitory, and NPY's effects are on circuits are inhibitory. So it suppresses excitatory glutamate transmission. There's some evidence that it may act on inhibitory transmission as well. Really understanding, what the mechanisms are. And there's some work of others. Bill Colmers and Janice Urban have been doing some beautiful work in looking at NPY and its effects in the amygdala on social anxiety, and they've identified some mechanisms that NPY acts through to regulate social anxiety, a little bit different from the type of anxiety studies that my lab has been doing, but really important as well, and for trying to understand what NPY does and how it's modulating brain circuits.
So there must be some connection to learning. Every time people talk about PTSD, it becomes a discussion about learning. Because we've learned to be afraid of something, we should be unlearning that fear, but we're not unlearning the fear. I don't know. I mean, that's the way the discussion normally goes, and I don't know how much that informs what you're doing, but is there a connection to learning in this?
So most likely there is a connection to learning. So neuropeptide Y, there's some data showing it can modulate learning and memory. And it can modulate fear extinction. There's data that MPY modulates fear learning and fear extinction. My lab in particular has been studying neuropeptide Y in the perforant path to the CA1 region of hippocampus, the sometimes also called the temporomonic pathway. And that pathway has been shown to be important for memory consolidation and fear learning. And so it could be that MPY's effects in that pathway are important for regulating whether particular stimuli are learned as being fearful and then formed into long-term memories about fearful stimuli. But PTSD is it's bigger than just anxiety. It certainly encompasses many other aspects as well. And so abnormal response to abnormal fear processing is thought to be part of that as well.
That's likely to be more than one place.
Yes, most likely.
Most likely, yeah. It might be like acting different nuclei, right? And having this effect on anxiety. You think that's a possibility?
Yes, I think that's likely.
Yeah. Okay.
Lot of areas for research going forward to try and better understand.
What are the effects of MPY in the perforant pathway synapse?
So MPY suppresses excitatory synaptic transmission, and it can suppress short-term plasticity, so short-term facilitation, which is when patterns of high-frequency input cause more neurotransmitter release and stronger glutamate synaptic responses. So that MPY normally suppresses that. Losing MPY's effects increases that. And other mechanisms of what MPY does, we're still working to discover the potential effects on long-term plasticity. And it's also not known what the effects are on inhibitory neurons and inhibitory synaptic transmission. And those will be important to figure out as well.
So short-term synaptic plasticity usually is controlled by the pattern of action potentials. And so
yes.
When action potentials come in a kind of a burst, then you tend to get some facilitation or
yes, at many, like at that. Many, it depends on the particular type of synapse and part of the brain, but at many glutamate synapses, it facilitates, meaning the response gets stronger during a burst, and at the temporomonic pathway synapses onto the excitatory cells, that is the case, and NPY suppresses that, so there's less of that facilitation.
So presumably NPY would also be preferentially released when there's a burst, but in this case it would be the burst in the inhibitory cell rather than the excitatory cell that would be driving that. Would
yes.
those be coordinated somehow?
Yes, and they receive the same input. So the same excitatory fibers coming from entorhinal cortex provide input onto the inhibitory cells and also onto the excitatory cells. And so they will be driving the MPY cells to fire, presumably fire at high enough frequency to release both GABA and MPY. At the same time, they're causing the excitatory synapses to release glutamate and facilitate.
So those two would work in opposition to each other.
Well, they would work. Yes, they would work together. They would work together. They would work in opposition. Yes. So the excitatory synapses alone would be facilitating, and in opposition to that would be NPY getting released and potentially dampening that. And you mentioned at the beginning about these peptides as being co-released with the GABA and and the role of the fast neurotransmitters, but peptides such as neuropeptide Y are thought to be modulators. They're modulating the effects of GABA and glutamate and modulating the circuits overall, and this is an example of that modulatory role.
So how do they do it? How do they modulate the glutamate, release of glutamate? What's the mechanism of it?
So in the other pathway that we studied, the Schaefer collateral pathway, it's been known for a long time, work of Bill Colmer's many years ago, that MPY suppresses that excitatory synapse glutamate release through Y2 receptors, and acting at by inhibiting presynaptic calcium release. And so that's been known for a long time. At the temporomonic pathway, our work more recently showed MPY modulates that pathway, and the mechanisms there are not as well understood, and we're in the process of elucidating that. But we think the mechanisms may be different.
So, you know, there's a long history of leveraging our knowledge of synaptic transmission with small molecule transmitters, pharmacological leveraging. So we've learned enough about the receptors and the transmitters, and we can create drugs that act at particular synapses and particular receptors, and there's this giant industry of making drugs to do that for a number of different behavioral and neurological disorders. So what are the prospects of doing that with NPY, of making drugs, maybe anti-anxiety drugs or anti-PTSD drugs?
So that's a great question, and there's definitely interest in trying to target the NPY system as a potential anti-anxiety. Neuropeptides are a little trickier because, unlike small molecule neurotransmitters, they're harder to get across the blood-brain barrier, and so not always as easy of targets. But there's certainly interest in that. There have been labs looking at. There's been a lab looking at intranasal delivery of MPY and as a potential therapeutic, and then other ways of potentially targeting MPY receptors. But there's definitely a lot of interest. There's a lot of need for developing new treatments for anxiety, and there's been a lot of interest in the NPY system as potential therapeutic targets for, but we still have a ways to go in terms of realizing that potential.
But are there antagonists, for example, for the NPY receptors? Are they peptides too?
So there are antagonists for the NPY receptors. There are a number of different types of antagonists for the NPY receptors. Really, to have anti-anxiety effects, we'd want agonists rather than antagonists. And to my knowledge, and there may be some I don't know about, but to my knowledge, there aren't ones that can be given systemically that cross the blood-brain barrier. I could be wrong about that, but because MPY does so many different things across different brain regions, it could be that a systemic treatment would cause a lot of side effects or through effects in other brain regions on other things that MPY controls.
That's definitely a concern, but of course, allosteric enhancers of GABA transmission have been huge, and nothing is more ubiquitous than GABA.
Right, so. Absolutely.
I was just wondering, because I don't know much about, maybe you do, but I don't know much about the receptors and how they work. Like, usually the active part of the peptide might be a relatively small molecule, not as big as the big peptide, and you could make a small molecule that would work on the receptor. So that's why I was asking about antagonists, because, but are the antagonists big old, hard to get in drugs as well?
So there are a lot of really, there are some really great labs that are working on drug development, agonists and antagonists, making them specific for the different receptor subtypes. And to answer your question, I don't know. I know there have been groups working on trying to develop a blood-brain barrier permeant antagonists. We wanted to use some in our studies and ended up doing studies where we needed to deliver the drugs into the brain directly because our attempts with blood-brain permeant ones, we weren't getting effects. But there may be some newer ones that I'm not aware of.
I mean, my motivations are not completely altruistic, I'm thinking, from an experimental point of view. It'd be great to have these drugs if we're going to really understand peptide transmitters and what they do. Then we're going to need the same kind of incredible tools that we have had for studying the small molecules.
Yes,
but we're getting there.
Absolutely.
I think the field has been changing a lot for the past few years, and I think the tools are getting better now to really detect this endogenous release of neuropeptides, especially, like, so we can start to ask questions, what is driving this release? Because now we can detect.
Yes.
That might.
So what does the NPY do in the auditory system?
This is what my lab is set to answer. So in the auditory field, things are a little bit different than other brain regions, right? Because when you think about auditory information and speech processing, everything's really fast, right? I'm talking to you, you understand, you answer back, and we go on. So the thought, most of the folks in our field was GABA and glutamate, ion channels, fast responses. And people didn't think much about these neuropeptides or other neuromodulators and how they impact your hearing process. But there is a larger time scale there, right? That's not only limited to GABA and glutamate. And neuropeptides, they can act in this time scale in ways that GABA and glutamate can't. So what are they doing? How they impact auditory processing? So we show, like during my postdoc, we show for the first time that neuropeptide Y is expressed in the inferior colliculus, in fact. And we mostly did in vitro experiments doing patch clamps, so patching from a neuron and applying NPY. And we showed that NPY changed the activity of these neurons in the inferior colliculus. We are now giving the next step and asking more sophisticated questions, like how is impacting auditory processing. So we started doing vivo experiments and infusing NPY and passing for different sound responses to see how NPY is shaping these auditory responses. So would that be physiological or would it be like pathological? Would NPY only be important for hearing loss or tinnitus, or could also be playing a role in regular conversations and really shaping speech processing? So we are not there yet, but we are building our way. So we are way behind the other fields. Like, we already know NPY is important for anxiety, for feeding. We just found out NPY might have a role in auditory processing. So there's a lot to grow there yet.
Great. That seems like a good place to start. So, thanks, Lynn.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn. That was so fun.
Yeah. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Charlie.
And this has been Neuroscientist Talk Shop.